Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Greetings, everybody. This is Woody Massey, producer of the Jimmy Della Valle Brooklyn Buddha podcast, co-hosted by Tim Hamamune and a few appearances by myself. Jimmy's got a few dates coming up. June is packed. He is actually going to be on tour for most of the month. Edgewater Casino in Laughlin, Nevada. He's going to be there from June 12th to June 14th. And then he'll be headlining at the Hada Casino in Arizona on June 15th. Then following up on June 16th, he kicks off the East Coast leg of the tour, Utica, New York, a Cavella's Comedy Den, and a lot of dates out there in the East Coast of New York after that, so check that out at jimmydelavalle.com. Today on the podcast, we have comedian Ron Jossel. Ron Jossel, a famous Filipino comedian, really funny guy. Go check out his sets on YouTube. They'll have you rolling. We just have a great back and forth about the comedy grind and, you know, what it's like trying to make a career for you in this and then this cutthroat business. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, you have a great week and enjoy the show.
Brooklyn Buddha. So I'm excited about having this guy because I've known him a long time. He's a comedian. He's a writer. He's from Canada. We actually met through Dwayne Perkins, who we all know, good friend of mine. And then of course he worked with Russ Peters and he really moved up quickly. Like, it's kind of weird. It's like you would think he hasn't been, like, when I first met him, it was like, oh, who the hell is he? You know, like, you didn't know, but he was really funny. And then I hadn't seen him for a while. And then he got, like, extremely fucking funny. So, you know, me and Tim caught him one night at the improv. He's got this bit that, man, I don't steal. Everybody knows I don't steal jokes, but God, I would love to steal this joke he has. About the fucking cell phone. He has a cell phone bit about the charger, which is so brilliant. So anytime I ever see anybody do a bit about cell phone charger, I walk up, hey, that's Ron. It's Ron's bit. Like, I just, anything. So anyway, so Woody, say what's up.
Hello, hello.
And Tim's here, my co-host.
Hello, one hello.
Without further ado, my boy, great comedian, good guy, Canadian, Ron Jossel.
Thanks, dude. Hey, thanks, guys.
Yeah, hey, buddy.
I've known you for like maybe 8 years now.
Yeah.
Because I started coming down here when Russell blew up 10 years ago.
Right.
Actually, before Russell blew up, I was coming down here 2001 and 2 and not getting nowhere.
Right.
And then after that, I met Edwin San Juan, you, and then from Russell and Dwayne. Then things start, you know, you start meeting people out here. I think that's the whole cool thing about LA is that your friends book you before the bookers do.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely, you know, that's the thing. It's like, so I'm in Vegas doing a private show. Dwayne is headlining. You're featuring Andrew Norelli, who has became a great comic. Andrew Norelli was the host.
Right, right, right.
And then I think he won that year the World Series of Comedy.
He did.
So, like, he hosted, and then he ran, and I did a guest set, and that's when me and you actually got to see each other.
Right.
And it was like, and you were really good then, but there's something that's clicked in you. What do you think? You definitely found your comedic voice.
I just accepted who I was.
Yeah.
I think every comic that asks, every comic wants to find out what their voice is, but really they're not accepting who they are at that moment.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I accepted who I am at that moment, then it started working, because you never want to be yourself in the first few years of comedy, because you don't like yourself.
Right.
And then when you like yourself, that's when the real shit happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, now I accept all my flaws. Before, I pretend it wasn't. You know, it's like people that are, I'm 40, I turned 40.
Right.
And when I like being 40 more than being 39.
Right.
Because when I was 39, I pretend it was in my 30s.
Right.
Like, early to mid-30s.
Like, you're known to have, like, your little chin strap beard,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was, you were fatter. Like, yeah. You know, of course, I'm fatter, so I could say it. We're okay with that. So
I
you,
can't say
yeah, yeah.
You so, have a beard too.
Yeah. But you were fatter, But it looked great on you. But now you've slendered. Are you working out on the road?
Yeah.
Stuff?
I mean, I stopped eating a lot of. I quit smoking.
You were smoking, right?
I quit smoking a year ago.
Good.
And I also started going back to the gym and not eating, like.
You look great.
Oh, thanks.
You do not look 40. I mean, people say I don't look 43, but you do not look 40. You look like you're late 20s.
I cover well, man. I think fat people are the best in disguises. Like, if there are more fat people in the military, the opposition couldn't find them.
Right, right.
We just blend into stuff. We're just really good at camouflaging the fat.
A fat camouflage. Yeah. Fucking pants.
Like, nobody thought Biggie Smalls was fat, even though his name was named Biggie. They're just like, he's just a rapper.
Triple X Large is very camouflaging. That's what you're saying. Yeah. You know, that's so fucked up. This is the fattest I've ever been.
You look good.
Oh, thanks, man. But, this is the fattest I've ever been. And it's, I've gone from double X to triple X. And it's killing me, like, buying clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the other day.
What if Hawaii, man?
Yeah.
Because their medium is a large.
Yeah.
Because they got to work with Samoans.
That's the only place. You know,
they eat a lot of spam.
Yeah.
Spam. Yeah.
From the military in the 50s, I left it there.
That's so funny.
I don't knock it. That's spam masubi?
That's good.
All right. Getting ghetto. All right. Look, my mom loves spam, too.
Have you ever had spam masubi?
I hate it.
It's better than the corned beef masubi.
Yeah,
my mom loves fucking spam. She always pushes the spam when you go to the house. Like, really?
My roommate in college, he was Hawaiian, so whenever we got home drunk, he'd just get in the kitchen, start seaweed wrapping spam. It was the best. Yeah, dude. It was amazing.
Get the fuck seaweed wrap.
I don't think I've ever.
So what's the deal with the...
Well, spam also be, it's like a rice block.
No, not that. You're talking about like seaweed wrapping sushi type of thing.
Yeah, but with spam, but there's like gravy in between the spam and the rice. So it like makes like this sandwich thing. Yeah. Wow. Oh, so good.
That's the actually spam sweat.
Yeah.
Spam sweat.
The sweat off the spam's balls. That's what that is.
If you put it on the counter, you'll see it sweat.
Yeah.
There's so much fat in that.
Leaves the can wet.
Oh yeah.
So let's go old school. Tim's gonna laugh about this. So Ron comes out here from Canada, and he's got this tape that everybody has. What tape is it, Tim?
With the Canada, what was it?
Club.
Club 54.
Club 54! Dude, you used this tape for years. I would look online and go, why the fuck is he still got that tape up there?
You know
there?
What? That was my first taping.
It was a great tape,
97.
Though. Yeah.
I walked into
Ben
Guyatt.
He sells it to
Australia and New Zealand. Makes tons of money off all these Canadians. Zach Russell had one, too.
I know, everybody.
You see him wearing these weird red pants.
Yeah.
And bombs, too. And so they're so bad as an editing show that I'm bombing in this first 3-4 minutes, and they zoom up on faces that are not laughing, but add canned laughter. So you see no laugh and hear, and I'm like,
you know,
why don't you zoom in on stuff that people are laughing at, or nothing. It's the worst.
I did that TV show.
You did that?
No. I was supposed to do that. I didn't end up doing it. I couldn't work it out. I was supposed to do, who was the guy I used to go headline and then you headlined? Paul?
Gatto?
No.
Paul Morrissey?
Paul, the guy from Montreal. He owned a comedy club.
Paul Ronca,
right?
Yeah.
So, and we couldn't. I was like, I got to do this, but I want to go do the thing. And then I couldn't do both. I was headlining his weekend, and I couldn't make it work. That was the worst thing. That really annoyed me, because I used to do the first Italian wise guy show there.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And then
just
all
for
of
last
a sudden,
picks it up.
It just for last picks it up. I'm not in it. Don Myrera, that's fine. Love Don Myrera. And then Joe Starr, I love. But Joe Starr is our friend for years. He's not Italian. He's Puerto Rican and Jewish.
Irish.
And we're like, what the fuck? So, like, you know.
Hey, man, there's a big population of Greek and Italian in Montreal. Italians were around when Montreal was, like, in its beginning stages.
Oh, no, I know. Because Paul Ronca put me at a theater where I headlined. And it was, like, it was great. I'm, like, the headliner. Applause, standing ovation, And then they're like, and I can't speak Italian. When I'm in Italy, I do. But there, and, you know, and I'm going to butcher this. But it's like, so I'm like, hey, thank you. And I'm getting off stage, and they're like, enough. Right, the headliner. Like, now this guy does his whole act. Who's the famous guy?
Joe Avati.
So Joe Avati closes the show. Everyone's coming up to me, and I'm like, I thought it was the headline. Like, yeah. You know, I just did an hour. Like, but then he did it all in Italian. He's great. Joe Avati. He
kills it. I mean, biggest Italian comic right now, right?
Huh?
He's still the biggest Italian for draw? I know his Australian crowds are huge in Italy.
Yeah. Well, anyways. So you have been... you know, when I first met you, you were kind of just like, oh, let me get out here to the East Coast. Let me get, you know, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I got this overseas agent. All of a sudden you're doing tons of overseas.
Well, what's weird is I don't have an overseas agent. It's just they found me on YouTube.
Okay.
And then they brought me 2007 and in Dubai. And then the ruler... started bringing me and a bunch of other guys, like doing Perkins. So we did the first, after Ahmed did their terrorist thing.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We did their second Showtime special, right? And then from there, I just kept going back to Middle East, and then Scandinavia started, you know, I had a connector there. And then my manager now, she stepped in because she knew people in Asia.
Right.
So that's how it happened. So it was like the YouTube hit, 2007, because I think YouTube back in 2007, not too many people, it wasn't oversaturated in comedy.
Right.
So people could look at YouTube and go, hey, this guy is this, and this, you know. Now it's so hard to, you have 10 million hits for
yourself. You know, it's so funny, I used to have, I used to have this 45-minute headlining set on YouTube, and I had all this different shit, and then one night after my show, the lady comes up, oh my God, I love you, I watched your whole... hour yesterday, and then I bought the tickets, and she's like, you did a lot of the same stuff. She goes, but you did some new stuff. And I was like, oh my God, they're watching a 45 minute clip. God. So I was like, take the fucking thing off. Like, I only have like a 10 or 11 minutes.
Do you put in like just regular videos now instead of your stand-up? Because I see more comics doing that. Them walking around the street making fun of stuff, like
right,
spontaneous, or them making their own little videos.
Yeah,
because they don't want to burn the material. I see that more.
Yeah,
Burr did that. He threw, after like 2 years, he throws all of his old specials up on YouTube. Like, right, all of them are up there except his newest Netflix one, just for free. All of Patrice's old specials.
You know what? Being in New York, you're a New York comic originally.
Yeah, of course.
You guys get more stage time than LA comics.
Oh yeah, I mean, dude.
You do like two a night, three a night.
Dude, sometimes, seriously, sometimes, six to like eight sets a night. Like,
can't you burn out doing too much?
Because
now you don't need to do it as much now.
No, of course.
When you start, you have to just.
Well, you wanna. There's a guy. What was his name? The cab driver, Jimmy.
Jay London.
No, Jimmy. Jimmy, Fela.
Oh yeah.
Right. So Jimmy Fela, is like just. He's kind of like. He was like this handsome. He kind of looked like Barney Rubble, though. Like, he was not so much, but he had like the blonde, like a big head, like, but really, really funny. And he was a barker, so we would do Ha, right? Mm-hmm. And me and Tim were not barkers. We were just doing seven spots a night at Ha, right? It was seven spots
up to
that's crazy.
Just at one club, right? So we would do that, and Jimmy Fallon would come in, and that's how we'd meet him. And and I go to Tim, I go, did you see this guy, Jimmy? This guy's fucking hilarious. And I'm like, how long are you doing it? And he's like, oh, man. And he goes, I've been doing it about 2 years now. And I'm like, yeah, but you're doing seven spots a night, every night. You're doing 50 fucking spots a week. You're doing 200 sets a month.
That's crazy.
Dude, dude, in 2 years, he was so fucking strong. Mm-hmm. And who was the other guy? The other guy from Jersey, they did that tour together. And they got...
Chuck?
Yeah, Chuck. Chuck Meganelli. They got so fucking strong. And you'd be like, holy shit. And then they started breaking. Anyways, he kind of disappeared, hadn't seen him for a while. And then it's almost like you go back to the old drawing board. And then what he did was he had a baby. And he brought his baby on stage at Gotham one night. He couldn't get a babysitter.
He's not allowed in. He has to be 18, right?
Yeah, well, I don't. He brought his baby on stage, and then he did this thing like it was kind of like he did a prank thing with the. He was driving a cab. He started driving a cab, and he had a python, and he would have it come back, and he filmed it, and he got kind of like famous from it.
Wow.
You know. So, anyways, it's like you never know what's gonna happen with you as a comedian. Like there's. So, as I was talking to you about Vic DiBattista, who we both have the same manager, Vic is an amazing comic. And Vic has been doing comedy for 30-something years. Me and Tim opened for him, you know, many times when we were younger. But what Vic did, Vic got famous from, did you ever see the Bread and Milk video?
Yeah.
That's Vic.
Oh, yeah.
29 seconds.
That's crazy.
Through the roof, dude. The numbers.
Why don't we just do that instead of
putting our
material?
Yeah. 36, but he's already a phenomenal headliner. He just didn't have the draw. And this Bread and Milk took him to a level that is insane. And this thing is getting around the internet. All of a sudden, Kevin James calls him and says, hey, I want you to be in Mall Cop Blart 2, which I actually just watched last night. Vic does a great job. And my good friend Shelly Desai is in it. If you know Shelly, Shelly did the podcast, and he's in our pilot that me and Tim star. With Jerry Houck. Anyways, this is the thing. These guys are taking these videos like, who's this kid? Justin Hires, right? This kid? Mm-hmm. He's now playing Chris Tucker in the Rush Hour series, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to have him do the podcast. He was a guy that put a video
he's up.
He kept putting up these videos and these vines and shit like that. I mean, he's running around doing stand-up.
On SNL now who got he got on there just and got all those Allstate commercials. Not Allstate, one of those insurance commercials.
Yeah, that guy.
Just from posting videos up on YouTube.
He was doing he did the little kids commercial. You ever see the guy with the little kids?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, hey, so what are you doing? They're the kids in school. Great. And he was awesome, mm-hmm. but they haven't really featured him well on here. And he was amazing in those commercials.
Well, you know what it is.
And then, of course, my friend Leslie Jones is the big breakout star, the big black mm-hmm. girl.
She's her sketch?
Yeah.
Louis C.K.
She's amazing.
She's
amazing.
Great. Yeah.
That's my
and she was a local comic that just was doing everything. I saw her Ice House many times. Mm-hmm. And
what it is, like, people don't realize that the younger generation... They asked who was the top 10 celebrities, and like 6 out of the 10 were YouTube stars.
Right.
So that generation, now they have channels where it's like instead of kids watching TV, they watch YouTube and internet.
Well, I was talking to my friend's kid who's 18, and I go, so do you guys use Facebook? He's like, only if my mom needs something and wants to know where I am. I'll have to send her a Facebook.
Yeah.
So that's for kids to their parents.
Yeah.
I go, other than that, you don't. He's like, no, Vine's dead. I go, Vine's dead? He's it's getting old. But Instagram.
It's saturated now.
Yeah.
The moment everyone starts advertising,
they're big
on it, it's
with
done.
Their fucking Instagram.
Instagram, I go, so you don't even talk to each other? Like, you don't send messages to each other? He's like, no, it's just videos and. That's all you need.
Instagram, as soon as Instagram changed with direct message, now that you could message someone directly off their pictures, that's when it was like, okay, now it's here to stay.
But that's all they care about, you know, and YouTube, obviously, right? So the generation, our generation, in a weird way, has to go back to, like, setting those videos up, seeing how, you know, you're like how your friend did the bread thing.
Yeah.
Snapchat's the thing now.
Snapchat is amazing. Yeah, I videotape my Snapchats from other people's phones so I could watch it again.
Oh, that's fun.
Especially if there's nudity.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So coming out here, speaking of nudity, have you had any luck with the ladies out here in L.A.? Has it been a different situation?
You know what's weird? L.A., girls, especially in the big clubs, care about the stars.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But outside of it, they care, but they're cool with that. Like,
right.
Yeah, in L.A., just the competition is just really hard.
Right.
For any human being to live out here and to breed out here.
Right.
Yeah. You just have to be a high level, or you go to the outskirts, and it's back to normal.
Yeah, you just go to Irvine Improv. Right.
My buddy put it in perspective perfectly the other day. He's like, in L.A., everyone here is trying to do something. So no one wants something serious.
Yeah.
Like, they'll keep it super casual. Like, you just stay on call, come around when I need you. But otherwise, I got shit to do during the day.
Yeah. Like, if the average girl talks to 10 guys while she's single, here it's probably
20
and half of them are millionaires.
Well, you know, it's funny. So, like, Tim, everyone knows, Tim is a cyber whore. He dates whores off the internet, and I just call him whore.
Tim
just
is
regular
the
girls.
Charlie Wilson of the internet dating.
He does very well. I mean, my wife, God love him. I mean, loves him. You know, as he's like our family member. But she's like, how does he get so much pussy? Like, it's insane the amount of girls that he gets.
Well, our game is different now because before, you know, the Tinder and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You'd have to call weird numbers.
Right.
Meet people in alleys. Like, I mean, to really get laid.
Right.
Or you go to a club, which is so hard for an antisocial person or introvert. Now, the game's changed for men.
Yeah.
And our status is back up again. And the women's have kind of decreased a bit because it's now we're the women.
Right.
We have the opportunity to just pick and choose how they used to. So it's changed everything.
Interesting.
Girls, though. Like, girls have it. Like, if you look at girls' dating profiles on, like, Tinder or Plenty of Fish, like, compared to a dude's, like, dudes, it's a numbers game. It's like, yes, no.
I didn't even know there was a no on those.
Oh, yeah.
When you see Is there a no?
They invent the machines that just swipe right, swipe right. But
Justin has a program.
Yeah.
Justin. You, what's your program? You could add 2,000
tools for Tinder,
dude.
Justin,
yeses wait. For 1,000 people.
That's hilarious. Justin Rivera is in the studio. He, we're gonna do him next.
He gets laid every month. Like, this guy will be in Vegas, and he found the app. Mm-hmm. He presses, get 1,000 yeses. You know, like, and all of a sudden he's like, I gotta go downstairs now. I'll go check if he's lying. It's 1 a.m.
Yeah.
So I'll go down, I'll see him like drinking wine. He doesn't even drink.
He's drinking wine with a girl.
And then he's in the club dancing, he doesn't dance. And then the next morning he comes in 8 a.m. and I'm like, well, how was it? It's like, it's good. Before that app, he would go out and meet, like, he goes, oh, I gotta go out. We were there in Vegas, and 4 days straight, he went out and met a girl each night. Nothing, because he only had to. When you do it yourself, you don't have that much options. You just take what you got.
Right.
And he ended up dating this guy was just watching them the whole night, and she was like, "That's I'm part of the cartels. So, that's just a bodyguard that's making sure." And he just, I'm like, "What are you doing? Just get out of there." Now with this app, you get to pick and choose more.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 1,000.
Well, if you look at a girl's profile.
Do
like
you have this app too?
She has literally 1,000 unread messages on Plenty of Fish.
What, is she a star?
No, she's just, you know, some girls, like, if you take a couple good, like, pictures with filters, because she looks a lot better on paper than she does.
I met my girl through Tinder.
Really?
Yeah.
So you have a girlfriend?
I have a girlfriend. Oh, I met her through Tinder, and it was like my 5th Tinder date. And my first week on Tinder. And I hate the fact that I got hooked up that fast. It was like after the 4th girl, I was like, so there was like 4 girls, and some of them were nuts, so you just bang and run. Like, as soon as you come, you have your car started.
Yeah.
You press the button and just drive off. And this one was a real cool girl, but I'm like, damn, I got hooked up too fast. Now I watch Justin, I'm like, I see, I'm supposed to do that.
Yeah.
4 years on Tinder, couple venereal diseases, and then you get him healed, and then you meet your girl.
Yeah.
Now it's just like, oh, man, the technology got it too fast for me.
Yeah.
So, good. So you have a girl. So what is it like being on the road with the girl?
She misses me. I never miss her.
She in Canada? That's hilarious.
Yeah.
She's in Canada?
Yeah. And she's like, I would miss you so much. I'm like, I don't miss you. She's like, why? I go, because this is what I've been doing for 10 years before meeting you.
Right.
I've been in comedy 18, but on the road 10. And I go, and to me, we leave the road, and when we come back, our life continues.
Right.
But the weird life we live on the road vanishes, and we don't remember it.
Right.
It's a portal, and you're like, there's drinks and people running around.
Except when you see those bumps, you're like, oh, that bump on my dick. I remember that.
Just pop
that was fucking
that's
Washington.
Pins Papa. That's a pins are
that was Oregon. That's Papa. You know,
you come back and your wife is like, oh, I miss you. And you're like, I didn't even know I was gone for 6 months.
You know, that's so funny because I have to go. I think I got to go for like 18 days.
Is she used to it?
Yeah, yeah. She's cool. She's really cool. I can run out. I can run around. I used to run around and do like a couple spots a night every night. And then that just got old. You know what I mean? It's like I'd rather like tomorrow.
Do you hang out with comics at night still and eat late?
What I do with Tim. See, the good thing is that Tim is now here. When we were in New York City, our night every single night was do Boston Comedy Club, stand up New York, maybe pop at the Strip, but then
that's a life.
But and then we would go and end up at the Cellar, and we'd be hanging like me, Tim, Patrice, and then we'd go eat really late. So we'd either eat at the Cellar or with Godfrey or whatever it was, and it was like great. That was our life every night. But then. Then we'd go, and I had this girlfriend. She was, like, extremely fucking hot. And
aren't you shocked when you get those? I'm very shocked when I get them.
Well, no, because I have a good face. You have a good face.
I'm shocked still.
Girls like our faces.
Yeah, but in my head, I'm like, I can't believe this is going in you right now.
No. I've never been shocked.
I was talking to my ex-girlfriend last night, and she told me, I was actually surprised.
I'm shocked that Woody has ever been in any pussy.
Me too.
You guys got to see. He's like
a great hair.
Woody, he's like a Muppet. And you guys got to look up Woody, David Woody Massey. You know, it's funny. I was just watching. It's hilarious. I was just watching Rich Aronovich, who's our buddy who tours with Jim Brewer.
Right, right.
And he does that bit.
Oh, yeah.
He does the Muppet bit.
That's funny. Oh, Muppet dancing or running.
He does his comedy time. And he fucking, he goes, quick impression, he goes.
Right.
And he goes, you know what that is? He was here, but now he went back to New York. He tours with Brewer.
So what's the difference between LA and New York comics? If there's a difference, what would you say?
The LA New York comics. A New York comic is, I guess a New York comic is satisfied with not really going on the road because they can do so many spots. Like, I was just talking to somebody the other day, and I said, oh, he's still in New York? I go, why doesn't he go to L.A.? And the girl was like, well, you know, he does a Cellar every night and this and that. I'm like, well, how much money can he make? Even if he makes 100 a spot, and if he does 3 spots a night, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, you know, that's whatever that is. It's only $6,000 a month.
That's awesome.
It's okay. It's not six figures. It's not
in New York.
That's, a quarter of $1 million. You know what I mean? Yeah,
but they're happy doing that.
Yeah, but he's not doing 3 spots. You know, every single night like that. Mm. But you know, I mean, there's some, but like there were so many comics that were great that me and Tim came up with that would do like Russ Meneve. I think you're a great comic. We're
that
friends.
Guy's awesome.
You know Russ. So yeah. Russ. And Tim knows because Tim was featuring for him in, like, Long Island. And then Russ is like, yeah, I don't like the road. And Tim's like, this is, fuck, 30 minutes from the city. This is not the road. This ain't the road. This is Long Island.
I was there. Do you know Cool Herm? I don't know if you know Cool Herm, but he's a friend. He lives in the Bronx.
Oh, I know who he is, yeah.
And so this is 1997, the first year doing comedy. And Cool Herm, his name is Herman, but he'll never call himself Herman. And he was an ex-pimp. He used to be a pimp, but he sucked at selling pussy because he was too funny looking. And so he became a comic. And he brought us to this place called Bootknockers in Bronx.
Right.
And it was all pimps, drug dealers, and hookers. And we're all dying. And he's hosting. And he's killing doing pimp jokes.
Right.
He's like, remember when your father was a pimp and his hat would fall and you would laugh because the wind would take it and he'd run out after his hat? And everybody's like, oh, shit. And I was like, I don't relate
you're like,
to this.
No one remembers when their father was a pimp.
Yeah.
Just you and Richard Pryor. Who were you with?
Me, believe it or not, I was there with, it was a guy, Saturday Night Live guy. He wasn't even famous yet.
Dean Edwards?
No. He's in the hospital stuff.
Artie Fuqua.
No.
Tracy Morgan, yeah.
So
okay.
He knew Tracy. He grew up with Tracy Morgan. So we're walking out of Bronx, and he sees Tracy. He's like, oh, Tracy. And Tracy comes up to us. He's like, hey, man, do you guys recognize me? Because he was his first year of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. Well, I go, hey, you're the black guy in Saturday Night Live. He's like, man, I don't want to be known as the black guy in Saturday Night Live. So he went out there. And so him and Tracy killed. All the Canadian, me and this other Canadian guy are dying. And Russ comes in. and destroys this.
Russell?
Russ Maniv.
Oh, Russ Maniv, yeah.
And destroys, and they're all like, yeah, that guy mics like 5 to 7 times a night.
Yeah.
And just mics black rooms, Puerto Rican rooms, white rooms. And I was like, this guy is just killing this place with his own type of humor. Where they didn't want to stretch for our humor.
Right.
But they stretched for him because he was just that good.
Do you know Louis Schaefer?
No.
So Louis Schaefer is an icon from New York City. He was the host when me and Tim started. I don't know, when Chappelle was there, he wasn't the host. But he was there. But he was the host. And Barry Katz, I think he was managed by Barry Katz. He was the host of Boston Comedy Club. Mm-hmm. And he's like, his thing was like, Louis Schaefer, not gay. Not gay, Louis Schaefer. And then he did a TV show, Vibe, with Keenan Ivory Wayans.
Right, right.
So he did that and killed. So then I remember being at, like, New York Comedy Club. And they were like, oh, he was on this and this. And like, oh, that's great. He's like, yeah, who cares? Like, he didn't care. Like, and his thing was not gay, not gay, not gay. He moves to England and becomes, like, a big-time comic in England. Got married. He's not gay. Mm-hmm. But that was his thing. And they had to... get a new host. So like Russ, it was like kind of like an audition, like Russ Maniv audition, like I think Eddie If. There was a whole bunch of different people. I wasn't interested in that, but so Russ becomes the host, and it is insane. So he's doing, I think he's hosting all night, and then he's running to do a spot at the Comedy Cellar, but that's all he could do.
Wow.
But so he's hosting from what we would start at 8 o'clock and go till 2.
Yeah,
maybe like till 2. We'd do 6-hour
shows. What the hell is going on here?
During the weekdays, right?
Weekdays.
And dude, and the show would be, you know, Dove Davidoff was like an open micer at that time, and I remember because I saw him. I hey Dove, you're gonna do well in this business. And then the Dove was like, hey, I'm doing a spot tonight. He was all excited, and but it was like every night. It was Eric Deskin, if you know Eric Deskin, Tim, me. Patrice, Rich Voss, Godfrey, Artie Fuqua, Eddie Ift.
And you got your Tracy Morgan.
Yeah, your Tracy Morgans would pop in.
Chappelle.
Jay Moore was, you know, like big at that time, so he'd pop in because he was managed by them. Dane every once in a while. Chappelle would pop in. It would be still always awesome. It was just like it is now to go to and go, oh, that's Chappelle. Mm-hmm. It was always like that. It was very few girls, maybe Paula Bell or something like that. But it was, that was our every night.
Yeah.
That was our training. That was our, as I say, and I don't want to degrade, because I'm not degrading, but this is just my only way of putting it. New York City is where you become a pro, and LA is where you sign your deal to be the professional, right. You know, basketball player, football player. You're now... going to be the LeBron James, the Kobe Bryant here.
So you don't move to LA until you have some kind of management or some kind of in.
Yeah, you have to have, like if Tim came here, like without, and if Tim didn't know me or anything,
it'd be hard.
You know, we just shot a pilot. I just got him in a movie, but Tim has did a great job acting in all these things. It's not like he wasn't ready. Tim was ready years ago. He just didn't come. He got caught up in a marriage and, you know, shit like that.
Yeah, because I was going back and forth for 12 years.
Yeah.
In the last, my last 3 years, I've been down here maybe once a month for the, even 2014, I was here 16 times in a year.
So right.
I was doubling. I was here for, we'd go 1 week in L.A., go back to Toronto, do some shows, come back the second.
I remember, you're like fucking, dude, was that not affecting you with the fucking, I hate to fly that much, but you're flying, and then were you not seeing the flight prices going up?
Because
you were like coming
flights.
Back.
I wasn't paying for flights. We were doing the Filipino comedy tours, so they would pay for that.
Oh, right? So you, okay. So
or I would do shows outside of L.A. that were like corporates or whatever, so they would fly me out, and I would use that time to play Store, Factory, Improv, Comedy Magic Club, Ice House. So those
right.
five. That was it.
Right.
Right. So that's all I was doing, right? And I was doing that for years, you know, like for until now I have like at least 20, 40, 50 friends that I've known through
right.
those years that now transitioning, moving in here next month in L.A.
Yeah.
is an easy transition.
So you're staying with Justin now?
I'm staying at Russell's house for a couple months until I find a place, right? So far I'm in Justin's house just because I don't live here yet, but like the end of next month I will be I okay. stayed at Russell's for 2 months. Okay. Or whatever. Like, I mean, Russell says stay as long as you need, but Russell, anybody that stays at the house has to know that do you have celebrities staying in there, family staying in there? You got to leave when there's just too many people there.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. Russell Peters, people, you know, that's one thing I want to say about Russell Peters that people don't know. You might see him on TV and think, wow, he's such a nice guy, such a great guy. Like when you watch him host The Last Comic Standing, or he is the nicest guy. He's the most generous guy.
Generous, yeah.
If comedians can learn anything, comedians that are doing theaters and stuff like that, that are not paying the openers what the openers deserve, take a note from Russell. Russell makes sure, you know, that you're part of the show. I remember the one thing. Doing a show with Russell, we were doing the Pechanga Theater, and it was me, Craig Robinson, and Russell. And I came back, you know, and I had a good set, and I talked to him, and I said, how come you never watch your show? He's like, I listen. And I go, what? He's like, yeah. He goes, I make sure that wherever I am in the back room here, or in the green room, or wherever, there's always a speaker so I can hear what's going on.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, that's, you know what I mean? So, like, he is just has a well-oiled machine. There's, you know what I mean?
And he was like that before he was big. I've met him in my first year of comedy. He was at his eighth. And when he blew up, he didn't know he blew up. He calls me up and was like, hey, do you want to open for me in China? Go to China.
Yeah.
First class tickets, you know, where he's like, right. This is weird. We're in these business seats. Our hotels are 6-star.
Uh-huh.
There's a lineup around the building for him to see him.
Right.
And he thinks it's not for him. He's like, there must be another headliner.
Yeah.
Because I'm not famous yet.
Yeah.
We go in and the guy goes, hey, thanks for coming out. You're the biggest thing on YouTube right now. And Russell was like, I don't even have a computer. And so he shows him he got 2 million hits in like 4 days.
Right.
Wow.
And he goes, how much is the ticket? Sees the price, $100 American a ticket.
Uh-huh.
A lot of expats and locals that know English. There's 1,000 people each show for 10 shows. Someone's making, you know, $100,000 a show, or maybe $20,000. He's getting paid $20,000 for the whole tour.
Right.
And I'm getting paid $500 each show. So I'm making $5,000 and he's making $20,000. And he says, if I don't get 50% of the door sale right now, I'm leaving. And he's like, we can't give you that. So he goes, wrong, let's go. We walked across the street. The guy ran back and all these fans were trying to grab Russell. And he goes, okay, I'll give you 40%.
Yeah.
That was his like first million he's ever made. And he was only made $30,000 a year before that.
Yeah.
And then he realized he blew up. And when we landed after China, he got calls from every big agency. And
of course.
Yeah, but he didn't know that. And he was that generous before that.
Always so generous.
He gave, you know, like, and even right now, the hospital that his dad
passed away.
He put in millions of dollars to put this other part attachment to the hospital.
The wing, yeah.
Yeah, for free, so people can die in grace, because sometimes you're too terminally ill,
mm-hmm.
and they can't keep you in either. Mm-hmm. And my mom passed away 3 months ago, and she passed away in that place.
Oh, sorry. Oh, here.
Oh, it's okay. You know what?
Yeah.
I'm totally fine about it. The weirdest thing about when someone dies in your family,
mm-hmm.
people think you... people don't know how to react,
mm-hmm.
and it's something that happened 3 months ago, so I'm past that point.
Mm-hmm.
So in the funeral, people were all like, and I'm like, relax.
Yeah.
You know, and that became a thing with me and my brother going, look how they cry.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my uncle has smelly tears. That's weird. Like, it was just, you know, because they don't know that when someone dies, you know, if anybody...
Sure.
They don't know you grieve really that week before they see the funeral. You're fucked up.
Yeah.
You're crying 24 hours, like, this doesn't stop. It's it. Yeah. You know, and then eventually it subsides, and then they're in that stage because they just
mm-hmm,
hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the funniest thing is when you got to call your relatives after your... It's like my dad's... After the week of crying, they go, now we're going to call everybody to tell them that mom died. And my aunt... And my aunt's... It was the worst and funniest messages. Like, my brother called the speakers, like, Auntie, my mom's older sister... And she was her best friend.
Right.
It's like, Auntie, my mom died. This is what she said. And hung up. Like, that was it.
Wasn't that the end of Star Trek?
Yeah. That's it was like, Wrath of Khron. And then she left messages every 4 hours that were just the weirdest messages. The first message, it was like, and my cousin's like, stop it, Mom. Stop. Get your hands off me. And then, first save message. Just like, listen That's to this one. So we listened to all those weird stuff. And then we would get messages that weird stuff, you know. Is it going to be an open or closed casket? Why does it matter? But people want to see the dead.
Listen,
people want to see this.
Well, I mean, you want to talk about opener, closed casket, right? So my agent, 2 months ago, she was a drop-dead gorgeous African-American. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of big things going on. And my manager texted me, and I'm playing poker, and it's like Saturday, and I'm like, what the fuck is it? You know, like, and he goes, hey, I think Yuri died today.
Who's Yuri?
Yuri, that was my agent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah? And I go, what? Like, and I text back, and he's like, oh, yeah. He goes, it's in Variety, and he sends a link. And I'm like, what the fuck? Shot herself in the face.
Oh, shit.
39, right? So, of course, there's not a open casket.
For sure, yeah.
And this is a girl who was drop dead gorgeous her whole life, and now she dies, and no one gets to see her beautiful, you know, face. Like, it's a closed sadness, you know.
Because you can't do there's nothing you can do with that.
Yeah.
You can't even stitch it up and make it look normal.
Right.
You know, like, so even my cousin's father who died years ago, he didn't even look like him. Not because he got faces shot.
Right.
It's just, you have to have a really good artist.
Right.
Because underneath that stuff, it's a gray body, right? And they have to make it look like this person's sleeping. Mm. It's so hard to perfect. There's a weird industry about the dead.
Yeah.
That makes millions of dollars.
6 Feet Under?
No.
Oh, that was that HBO series, the mm-hmm. guy who played Dexter, Michael C. Hall.
Right.
He starred in it, and his dad, the first episode, his dad was a mortician. They lived in the
funeral.
And
he gets hit.
His dad dies, so he becomes like the head mortician and just shows like the process of like what they do to the body. He's like sucking the fluids out of it.
Well,
like
Tim, putting,
like,
Tim's, from, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Tim's ex-wife worked with Michael Badden. Right?
Did she?
Yeah, the Stacy. I'm pretty sure Stacy told me she worked with Michael Badden. You don't remember? Because Tim doesn't remember half the shit I'll remember.
It's all a sexual blur.
Anyway, she worked with Michael Badden, and you remember the guy, the famous HBO guy? He would have the glasses, and he had his like documentary. I mean, it'd be like insane. Like, and he'd talk about. He's like, and that the way I figured it out was there was no way there was, you know. And he would. So, anyways. She would work with him, and he smelled.
No, it's my aunt. You're talking about my aunt.
Oh.
My aunt was a dentist, so sometimes she'd work with, like, the FBI.
Oh, okay. So I knew somebody.
Yeah,
I'm
like my ex-wife. Yeah. What, she do a film with them? Yeah, my aunt would work with the FBI for forensic, and she said this guy, he was, like, the most known, you know.
Dr. Michael Badden. He would smell, like,
he'd be around
the dead.
He
would never shower.
You can't get rid of that stuff.
He would never shower. But when he did HBO show, they'd make him, like, you got to clean up for this. So, like,
hose him down.
We'll put you on TV, you got to take a shower.
It's a weird industry, man. Like, we're talking to the funeral director, and he was like, I go, what's the craziest thing you've ever seen? And it's like, well, there was one wife, her husband died, and so there was open casket, and she just lost it and said, no. Went on the body, grabbed it, and tried to take it out and go home.
Wow.
And because she couldn't come to terms of accepting it.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and they have to go, no, he's dead. He's like, no, he's okay. We'll just go home. This is not happening. We're going home.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm sorry. And she's trying to put the body on the body. And they're like, you know, it's like you see the bottom part of the body is not really done.
Right.
Like, it's like there's a foot now.
Right.
And the shoe came off, and everybody's like, oh!
Have you ever been a polebear?
Yeah.
That's a trip.
So being Filipino, is there a difference in the Filipino funeral as opposed to anybody else's
tradition
or something?
Catholic, right? So
okay.
It's that's the same thing.
And okay.
What we have is if someone dies in your family for 10 days straight in your house,
your family, your immediate family and friend and close family members come in every day, do a prayer and have dinner and have like a little. So it takes your mind off it. You don't have to be thinking about it.
Wow.
And then after that 10 days, you know, you start to grieve easier. But the hard thing with me was, mom died on a Sunday. A week later, we buried her on a Sunday. Monday, I flew to Philippines to do their late night David Letterman kind of show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was still in a plane the day after.
Right.
Landed. I had to go straight on TV to do a comedy show.
Yeah.
And then the weirdest thing was the driver who picked me up, we passed the street and he was like, oh, Lourdes Street. My mom's last name used to be Lourdes before she got married to my dad. I go, oh, mine too. He's like, yeah, her name is Maria Lourdes. I go, that's my mom's name too. And he's like, what? I go, yeah. And his mom just died and my mom just died. I'm like, okay, this is the weirdest thing.
Yeah, that's a trip.
And there was no relation.
No, he's a driver. He was paid to pick me up and drive me to the airport, to the show. I'm like, what the hell? You know, yeah. Then I'm doing the show. And then day after, fly to New Zealand, do a whole week in New Zealand, go back to the Philippines for a week. Then I get back home, and nobody's there.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, this is weird. You know, now I can feel it. Because before, you're playing host. Hey, auntie, how you doing? Hey, I haven't seen you in so long. Have some food. Then you do your comedy show that takes you away. It's at the Batcable.
Right.
It takes you away from reality.
Yeah.
Then you come back to reality. It's like, oh, this is the worst.
So you're doing, so you're on the road, how many weeks a year, you think?
Honestly, I'm pretty much like 45, you know, and I don't want to do that anymore.
I
2 weeks a month, I have to stabilize in LA.
Yeah.
Well, I do the auditioning and do all this stuff. That means I cut my work in half, right? Why are we doing that? You know, well, because to get something greater.
Right.
You know, and that's the truth.
So not okay, so I was mistaken the way you said it. 45, then 2 weeks here, but you're saying for 2 weeks out of the month, you want to stay in town.
Yeah.
That's going to be your plan. Well, good.
Isn't that a plan for most people?
Yeah, yeah.
How
no,
do
that,
people do it?
You know what I do? I like to go make some money, then come back home.
Now, what's
you know, like time? Roger Paul. You know, Roger Paul is my first, like, major manager, you know, industry legend, you know, whatever. He would tell me about the rainy day. You know, I mean, I have always saved money. Like, let's say, example, I go and make $20,000 for the month. I come back and I put it in the bank. And then I don't have to work for another couple months, whatever. It doesn't matter. I can sit here. And then usually after that, I actually feel very comfortable where there's something about going into an audition when I'm already secure money-wise.
That more relaxed.
I just come in and I'm like, and I'll tell them, hey, I just booked this thing. I'm doing, you know, like whatever it is, you know.
Everybody does it different? Or do you think most people do 2 weeks in, 2 weeks out, or 5 months in, 5 weeks out?
The problem is like, so Angelo Sarukis, right, who's our friend, of course, and Ange's a great guy. Ange's a great fucking actor, right? So Ange, you know, like these younger comics that might be listening or whatever it is, I want them to understand. You get addicted. You get addicted to the money. Like you're talking about, like the cruises. We get addicted to it. It's so easy. It's like we don't have a 9-to-5 job. We're
what,
like,
what does it bring you though? It just brings you money.
It just brings you money, right? If you come to LA to just be a comedian, don't move here just to be a comedian. I'm trying to tell the audience. If you want to come here to do commercials, get maybe a campaign, be a host of a game show, a TV show, come to Los Angeles. Right. That's where it's going to happen. You want to be a writer for a TV show, come here. If you want to just be a comedian, go to go to New York City. Like Hannibal Buress. So Hannibal opened for me before he became a big star. But he was literally a big star like 2 years after he opened for me. And we're doing these shows in the Midwest, and he's great, and you know, we shared a condo and everything. It's great, and he's like, man, I'm gonna move to LA, and I said, man, you should go to New York. I said, you got the New York thing, go to New York. And then he was playing Zanies, and next thing you know,
Knitting Factory.
But that's got nothing to do with it. He was at Zanies in Chicago. And someone from New York saw him. Someone had the manager. I think, I don't know, Hannibal, I don't know if I'm getting this right. I think it was maybe a Tal or somebody like that told like Three Arts or Dave Becky or whatever it was. And that was it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he went, and he just has something just really great, you know, the way he just delivers his jokes, and he's a really good guy. And that's the thing. That's another thing that, audience, I want them to know that never get too big for your britches, as like your mom would say, you know, like that's just the thing in my mind. Don't get big for your britches. Like, I'm at the Comedy Store, and everybody's around Hannibal, and I'm actually just sitting there, just watching this fucking craziness. And Hannibal walks up to me with everybody around him, and he's like, "Jimmy, man, how you been, man?" He sits down with me. He's like, "Man, I haven't seen you," you know. And it was just like so fucking cool. Like, he's this huge star now. Mm-hmm. You know, this is before the Bill Cosby, that all that shit. But regardless, it was only just what you were there. It was 6 months, a year ago, whatever it was. But it was just so cool because, I mean, he's fucking huge now. And he could be like, you know, and he opened for me. So it's like he could be like, "Ah, I bypassed you."
It's cool that he's still a nice guy and he still remembers people that, you know, were around before him.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, like how Russell is generous and a class act. And you have became so good. Like, you were like, when I first met you, you were like kind of headlining but featuring.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I completely consider you a national headliner. I think you became an amazing comic. And I love that you have, you know, even the death of your mother, you just kind of made funny.
Yeah.
You know? And when my father died in 2009.
Where were that?
I was shooting a movie in L.A., and I told the director, "I gotta leave." And he was like, and she was like, "What?" I said, I have to leave. My sister's, I have to, my dad's dying." Boom, I go, he dies in my arms. And a week later, I'm headlining in a casino for three shows. And I am sitting there in my hotel room, and I'm like, "All right, Dad, I'm gonna dedicate, you know, these shows to you." So I'm trying to dedicate every night, and I'm crying at the end of the show, getting standing ovation. It's like insane. I'm like, "I can't do this. This is killing me. Yeah. Can't dedicate every show like that in front of everybody." You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's like, you know, there was this one comedian. Like, some people like I consider you a class act. People will use, like, if they get cancer, they beat cancer.
Yeah.
"Oh, I'm gonna use this as my standing ovation every show." Like, you know what I mean?
And you can't do that.
Yeah.
Because there's something that we...
Yeah, it's bullshit.
Yeah, we take that, our parents or whoever that died or something, that you have cancer. We don't want to use that.
Right.
At any level. When I say that my mom passed away on stage, I say, "Shut up."
Right.
Don't go, "I'm over it."
Right.
Right. I'm not even over it, but I don't, I feel good.
Right.
It's not about that. This is what I find funny about it. Like, don't give me extra praise or extra claps or extra anything because I don't deserve it. That's part of life. You know?
That female comedian, she blew up last year, Tig Notaro.
Tig got cancer.
Because when Louis C.K. was at, I can't remember which club it was, but I think it was here in L.A., and he heard her set the night she heard she got, I think it was breast cancer. And then he threw it up on her website for like $5, like his special. And like,
just bought that. Well, she was, you know, it's funny because I remember hanging with Nick Swardson. And he would always go, he goes, "Yeah, man." He goes, "She's going to be a big star." He goes, "I don't know how it's going to happen." He goes, "But, you know," he goes, "everyone's trying to get it." And then, of course, that tragedy of the cancer and all that was what made her a big star. And she's awesome. She was always awesome. Mm-hmm. And how do you feel? I mean, is there anybody, I guess, she probably, I mean, people usually remember me. But I don't know if, like, Debra DiGiovanni would remember me, but she's a beast as a comic.
She's a killer.
I mean, you've seen her? Yeah. Chubby girl? I mean, she's so fucking strong. Now, she's, like, with Levity or something. Why doesn't she come here?
She lives here.
Does she? Never see her. Ever.
She's always at the Ice House. Right? But, again, if you're a Canadian comedian, you can't get any other job if you're, you know, you get a visa to work as a comedian.
Okay.
Right? So you can't really just, like, people are like, "Hey, man, just live down here and get a side job." I can't. You're only allowed to do comedy.
Right.
So you do these, Debra stays here for 5-6 months, then has to do a tour in Canada to make
$30,000
and come back.
Okay.
You know, so you may not see her for 4 or 5 months because she has to make money.
Yeah.
And then when she comes out here, then she's just
plugging away like everybody else, trying to get some.
Because, like, when I watch her, I'm like, oh my God, how does she not get a series? Like, I mean, she's a show. Like, she's a fucking TV show.
I don't know. I mean, what do you think? I mean, producers have their own thoughts.
Right.
What people should be. Maybe she doesn't fit something they're looking for, or maybe one day she will. And I think that if you're a producer, you're always looking for, there's a silhouette of a figure that you have to kind of fit.
To fit in there.
Got it. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you're not the shape yet. Yeah. You're not the silhouette of it yet.
Are you doing any acting, I mean, in like Toronto? Is that where you work? Toronto?
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, when I started comedy, I started acting at the same time. I got an acting agent.
Okay.
And I started doing acting classes, acting coach.
Who is it? Like Creative or whatever out there?
Yeah, the Creative Drive. I was Creative Drive for 10 years.
Right.
And I did like maybe five, you know, those independent films.
And Mike Sarukis was an agent. He wanted to rep me. He was like, Jimmy, you can come back and forth from New York. Yeah. But I didn't, you know.
But I mean, acting is it's so much harder than what I thought it was. Because I thought you just act, right? It's literally rubbing your stomach and tapping your head at the same time. Because when I finally had to do scenes where I had to walk, like, okay, you have to do your scene from here to here. You have to say these lines. From here to here, you have to say these lines. And from here to here, you have to fall or do something.
Right.
I'm like, my God, that's impossible, you know?
So you, you know, what is your biggest acting thing that you, I mean, because I have here, you know, comedian, writer, actor, like, What have you done in Canada, or have you booked anything acting wise out here?
Not.
I mean, look. You're going to book. I picture you.
Are you looking for a chubby Asian Filipino dude?
Yeah. Seriously, I mean, I don't know if they would consider you Filipino, or whatever, Asian. Like, there's that kind of that one guy that's like in a lot of those movies, but he's way bigger than you.
Yeah.
But he works all the time. Right. He's been like, I think he's on Hawaii 5-0 now.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of
the most stuff. Okay, the stuff I did in Canada was 1-800 Missing with Vivica A. Fox.
Okay.
I started as a background artist on that show, and because I had a background agent around 97, 98, whatever, and then finally got a real principal agent, and she's like, okay, well, I'm going to book you on a show called 1-800 Missing with Vivica Fox, and you're a speaking role, a regular cop guy. I'm like, and I was like, shit, should I tell her I have a background agent? I've been background for the last year on that show.
Right.
And so I didn't. So I just stopped answering my calls to my background agent. So if you see the first or the second season, I'm in the background of a cop office.
Yeah.
All the time, just as a guy just.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, he starts speaking.
Yeah.
No, right? gets killed.
Okay.
And then he's back again.
That's hilarious.
So it looks like this guy somehow was resurrected.
Because the Filipino way.
Yeah. Because I didn't tell my agent that I was a backer. And then when I stopped getting booked on that show, I mean, as a principal, I was like, I got to call back to the background agent. And so some of the stars on the show were like, is that Ron in the back? Like, he was already in the front.
Right.
And so there was like some other, they go, all Asians probably look alike. That's probably what saved me.
Right.
Is the stereotype.
Well, they call, like Roger, I remember Roger, I did like extra a couple times where he got upgraded to a principal
That's always a fun feeling because you get to separate from the loser friends when you're eating their craft shitty table. And then your friend's like, hey, remember us? Don't even know your name.
Yeah.
I'm eating a lobster instead of cookies.
That is, and I'm sorry I have done that.
That's a vast feeling.
I completely have done that. Like, as a comedian, I don't really disrespect the other comics like that. But as an actor, when they're like, when you go from like that non-union to now you're eating SAG.
Yeah.
You know, you're eating fucking, they're having sandwiches that the guy made with dirty fingers.
Oh, man.
And then you're eating lobster. And like.
It's unbelievable.
And they're like, SAG actors, SAG crew, you eat over here. And losers, non-union, and you're over here.
It's like they got a fly swatter. Yeah. Non-union, get it.
They're eating Oreo cookies with no filling.
Like, you know what I mean? That's the truth.
The worst is like that whole, the fruit punch. It's like a Kool-Aid jug. And you have to pump it. And it's hot.
Right.
Ugh. It's just the worst. I'm like, I remember being at the back. And there was no, we didn't have no internet phones back then.
when I was doing it. You know, you couldn't be on your phone and look at YouTube. You were just, you had to have conversations with people, play cards and talk.
Yeah, oh, that's fucking fun.
I hated that. Now, if I were to do background now, it'd be so much more easier. Go on your phone all day, just charge it, wait. Now? Well, it's so easy.
Tim doesn't really do background. He does audience sit. I don't know why he likes it, but he fucking likes it.
I watch like sitcoms.
It's like cash. He gets like 50, right, 100. Right,
yeah, so he just sits and watches sitcoms.
But sometimes, but they don't let you have your phone now.
No, yeah, yeah.
So he's got it. And it's like almost like he's going to prison. They're like, put your phones in here. Put your anal cavity. All right, sit right here.
It's a TSA, man.
So like him and comedian Will C and then some other, you know, people do it. I don't do it. I have done that shit in the past. My wife's always like, you know, that was the thing. Like, I would book, like, so many commercials or something, and if I wasn't working, we would fucking argue. She's like, well, if you're not on the road this week, why don't you just do extra work? I'm like, I audition every fucking day for speaking roles. I can't.
You can't.
She's like, well, just tell them you can't do it. I go, if they book me, I can be blacklisted. Now, here's something that actors don't know, and I'll let you guys know. If you don't know, I think Tim knows. So I'm doing this commercial. Me, Adam Hunter. This is many, many years ago. He was Adam Greenberg. You know Adam Hunter?
Right? Yeah, the MMA kind
of. Yeah, right? So we're doing this commercial for ESPN. They're busing us from the East, or from New York City to Connecticut. We're doing these commercials. We're doing like four spots. It's great, you know? And this girl, she's like Christina Ricci's best friend, and she's like, oh, you should hang out with me, and she's gorgeous, and I'm gonna bang her. I'm like, yeah, this is great, I'll bang her, whatever the deal is. And she goes, oh my god, I just got the call from I booked the national, it shoots tomorrow, and I go, didn't I just saw you just say that you could work the next 3 days?
Right.
And she's like, oh, but that doesn't matter. I go, you're going to be in trouble. And she goes to the, and he goes, I don't care. You can't take the gig. Tell your agent. You're booked here to do extra work.
Oh, God.
Right? And she's like, what? He goes, look. He goes, I'm going to tell you for the last time, you're booked. So I'm watching him yell at her and go, if you say you cannot do the gig, this is $1 million ESPN commercial. You are going to fuck up the gig and you're not going to be able to work. And we're going to have to somehow cut the scene or whatever it is. So you're going to be blacklisted as SAG. Give me your SAG number. I'm going to call right now.
Oh, shit.
And it was like, she's crying, talking to me. I go, this is why I don't do this. Like, that was literally my last time I ever did extra work. And then I actually got upgraded at that. And the funniest thing was, I'm doing the commercial, and I got a few lines and as upgraded. And I'll never forget it. So I go from this mental case girl to hooking up with a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
You remember? I told you the story. And I'm standing there, and all the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders are here, all the extras, everything. And I'm right here. Mm-hmm. And Adam Hunter, I'll never forget it. I love you, Adam, but I was so mad at Adam that day. And I go, I got to tell you. This is between takes. I gotta tell you, ladies, this is the worst lap dance I have ever had. Right? Nobody laughs. Oh, Adam doesn't laugh. I look, am I gonna laugh? Like, it was so funny. But they were scared. Everyone was scared to laugh. Yeah. And she goes, like, there's like a beat, and she goes, ugh, if that's what you do in your act, I'm not coming to see you. Like, so now I feel like I could have banged the Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, but my stupid fucking big mouth got me.
Sometimes it's worth a lot.
Well, it was.
Can I take a leak?
You can take a leak. Can you hold it for 2 minutes and we'll wrap it up? All right, good. All right.
Just pee in the cup.
I've never had anybody have to have such a good time. He had to take a leak. Are you having a good time?
I wish we could do this all day.
Okay, good. Good. Bounce. So look, I do have my next guest coming in, but dude, you've been great. There's a couple things I like to ask my people. What do you want to plug?
I don't, for like comedy.
Yeah, you got a website?
Yeah. Well, it's under construction, but let's do Instagram and Twitter right now.
Okay.
So Instagram is Ron Jossel 1.
Okay.
And Twitter is Ron Jossel.
But just spell it too.
So. R-O-N-J-O-S-O-L.
Yeah. And there's not a Facebook because the little kid Facebook, bullied you?
No, I still believe in Facebook. There's still people over the age of 19.
Okay.
So it's just Ron Jostle.
Perfect, perfect.
Yeah, Ron Space Jostle.
So you're now in a relationship with a girl, but you're on the road a lot with Justin, so you guys jerk off next to each other in the room. Me and Tim do.
He is a magician, so I don't see it come out. He doesn't.
All right. So are you you're looking at porn on your phone? Are you jerking off on your phone?
You know what I want? Some kind of holder that I could stabilize it.
I have one.
You can't watch.
I have one that goes on my belly. Look, right here.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
And it's right, it's perfect, right? Anyways.
That's better. I need one of those.
So, what would your porn name be if you had one?
Mine?
Yeah.
There's so many Rons in porns. Like, it's like Ron Jeremy.
Right.
Ron, I don't know. There's.
But what would your porn name be?
Ron Pale Moon, because my first, that's...
Ron Pale Moon?
Yeah, that was my...
Are you Filipino or Native American?
That was the street I lived on when I was...
Sucks with dicks, coming to the
sucks room. With dicks!
Ron Pale Moon.
Ron Pale Moon, okay, good.
Yeah.
Coming here to L.A. to be a star, who is your man crush?
My man crush?
Yeah, it's not a gay thing. Like, mine's Brad Pitt. Now I just found out Brad's bi. Nice. I just was reading the National Enquirer. So I got a shot. Brad.
I am the bootleg rock.
I'm bootleg rock.
I'm Via 97 with an extra 20 pounds.
So you just want to be the Rock's teddy bear.
I'm going to be his Danny DeVito.
In twins.
Filipino twins.
Yeah.
Hey.
That's fucking hilarious. Cool. Good. All right. So the Rock. Yeah, you definitely are the bootleg Rock. Yeah. That's hilarious. And last thing that I got to ask you is what is your favorite swear word?
My favorite swear word is... It's God damn.
God damn.
But not with God. With a T.
G-O. Is that like a Filipino thing?
Yeah, it's like God damn. So it's like, it's swearing but not swearing.
Okay.
Because it is swearing.
Okay.
But when you...
Southern black dudes too.
Yeah.
They like
God damn.
God damn.
Yeah.
All right, good.
But there's a T, so you're not really swearing.
So use God damn in the sentence 5 times. Use it to... Who is it? Who could we have you use it to? Who is the friend? Okay, we'll just have it to Justin Rivera. When you come in, and he's got his dick out, and he had said he had hooked up with a girl on Tinder, yet he's jerking off in the living room.
Right. So you have to use it 5 times?
5 times, yeah.
God damn, Justin. You don't need to do that. That goddamn girl's just outside the door, right? You got to make a shirt that says goddamn instead of your stupid shirts you sell after your goddamn show.
All right. Filipinos, that's 4. But anyways, thanks a lot, bro. It's been great.
Thanks,
Ron Jostle, Brooklyn
thanks
Buddha so Podcast.
Much,
Woody, Tim, we're out, bitches.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here. Stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.